This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the UFO Congress, and Daryl Sims is here with us. And, Daryl, you and I go a long ways back simply because I think your dad lived in my hometown at one time.
That was in Muskogee, I believe.
Yes.
My dad was Okie from Muskogee.
So that's pretty good. Now, you live in Houston, Texas?
That is correct, sir.
And the reason I bring up this is when you go alien hunting, is there a certain area? I mean, like deer hunting, you want to go up to Colorado or someplace?
It's an excellent question. If you want to find an alien or you want to watch UFOs for real, one of the best things you can do generically is to go ahead and follow the Rocky Mountains from anywhere from Alaska through America, through Central America, through South America, all the way down to Argentina. If you're anywhere in that Rocky Mountain range, you're going to see more UFOs and more physical contact of alien entities are going to occur there than anywhere else.
Now, you've been an investigator. That raises a red flag. Why? Why is that the place?
That's a really good question. I wished I had the answer to the big whys. Our evidence essentially points these things out.
Are you working on a theory about that or a hypothesis?
Well, we certainly are.
What do we call it in law enforcement? Scenario?
Absolutely. There are specific scenarios that these entities follow. One time I was talking to an investigator, and I said, isn't it interesting that when an abductee starts telling a true story that you can almost answer their question, really, literally fill in the blanks? He said, yes. I said, because the alien literally has a system that he uses. It's so methodical. It doesn't matter what part of the world we do our investigations, they're pretty much going to get the same treatment. So there is a system to this.
And so they have a, for lack of a better term, a playbook.
They have an M.O.
That's interesting in itself. And you are right. We've had a lot of abductees on, and there's a lot of similarities in things that happen. Okay, what are they really doing to you? What did they do to you? Why did they want Daryl Sims?
Well, again, I suspect that, and again, this is going to stretch me to the out to my limits of credibility or whatever I may have left. By that, I simply mean that I suspect that that they are genetically predisposed. I don't think they care about Daryl Sims. I don't think they care about anybody. I think I'm useful, or was for 13 years, and when I became unuseful and rebellious and wouldn't cooperate, didn't want to play cow anymore, at that point, they just kind of tossed me in the trash.
And in other words, Daryl is a lost cause.
Well, the expenditures are too great. There's plenty of other people out there that are going to comply.
And you're saying, basically, for people that are listening to us that think they might be abducted or have an abductee experience, you don't have to go along with the program. Is that what you're saying?
My suggestion is you should resist.
Are you suggesting actually use violence against them, or just tell them to go away?
I don't think violence is really the answer. I think this is much more of a mental and internal thing. It may be even spiritual. One of the things I find interesting, some of our abductees don't feel they can resist or do whatever, but they want to be programmed by us to do something on board the craft. And I said, so basically what you want to be is a spy, a trained observer.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left with Daryl Sims. And a lot of people come to this conference, don't they?
They sure do. And then, of course, whenever Jerry Pippin gets here, they all clamor around wanting to get on your station. Everybody knows Jerry, and they know that you carry good programming and that you do good work.
Thank you again. You know, when we talk about this organization here, for instance, and this conference, this is a huge international flavor, and you're no stranger to international activities. You go overseas quite a lot.
That's true. I just got back from Switzerland, Germany, Italy, Athens, and a week in Turkey.
So, what is there a difference of attitude, or do the same things happen everywhere around
it's
the world?
It's the same thing. It's just a different names. I'm on the airplane talking to a Turkish guy on the way over. He says, what do you do? So I told him. I described alien abduction. He didn't get it. And then I asked him, I said, explain to me what the jinn are like. These are these mythical creatures. It's just them in another language.
I recently talked to Andruffel about that. And
so he freaks out and starts describing alien abduction. I said, I thought I just described that. And he said, I never put the two together.
Yeah.
It's the same scenario. It's just different terms.
There does seem to be a paranormal influence or a spiritual or whatever, or another realm here? How do you feel about interdimensional things? Is that involved in this? I'm a kind of knock on the saucer door guy, but maybe I'm missing the whole point.
Well, I think that the idea of the entities being interdimensional or something of that flavor is more accurate than them being extraterrestrial.
In other words, we may literally be talking about demons.
It's possible, but the reason I have a difficulty with that is I am very familiar with demons and the nature. A demon, by definition, is a discarnate spirit. That means they had a body but now don't. They're looking to inhabit one. Aliens already have a body, and they're not inhabiting anybody. So there is no correlation whatsoever. People often will mistake this, but a demon is absolutely vastly different, has a totally different agenda, and is not the same kind of creature here. It just isn't.
So what do you draw from all of these 38 years of experience? You're talking about that it's not good. Right, basically, or is there anything
pretty
good
much
about this at all?
Well, I don't think it is in the sense that I don't think when my son, 6 years old, looks at me and I look at him and I said, "Son, something has happened to you since your event." And he looked at me in tears and he said, "Daddy, I'm not your little boy anymore.
You're right.
My consciousness has changed." A 6-year-old kid telling me this, he said, "I'm not your little boy," and he said, I don't even have the same morals anymore. He said, I'm ashamed to say that I'm not what you raised.
Well, as we mentioned earlier in the program, your son, you think, has turned out okay now. He's beat
this.
Yes,
he's beat it.
But by inference, are you saying that maybe some people are out here doing no good at all because of their experiences? In other words, are they becoming killers or whatever?
Well, I'll give you an example, and okay. I don't know this to be true, but this last week I got a letter in the mail, and I have about a dozen letters from inmates in prison.
Okay.
These letters, they often will listen to me on Art Bell or whatever, some goofy thing like that. This one particular guy emailed me and said, "I heard you on the Jerry Pippin show," and I said, "So where are you at?" And I wrote him back and said, "Where are you?" And he said, "Didn't you see the outside of the letter?" He said, "I'm in prison." I said, "No, wait a minute. Why are you writing me about an abduction?" He said, no. He said, "I was abducted in prison."
Oh, really?
He said, "The reason the guard can't tell anything about it, because he was taken at the same time, and if he admits that he was missing, he's fired." He said, "But we sit and talk about this." He said, "We don't talk. Guards and us don't have any decent interaction." He said, "But when it comes to abduction," he said, "we're like, we know each other because we're taken at the same time."
And why would they be going to prisons and taking people?
I don't know. I suspect they were just going to continue their program. But I've got several of these. But the thing that bothered me
point was that basically maybe he became a criminal because of this experience with the ETs.
That's possible. I don't know that to be the case. But I think it was interesting that the abductions continued even in prison. But I did get a letter this last week, and this was rather amazing to me. Guy has committed. He's been charged with murder, killed his mother, and he's in jail for this reason. He wanted me to help him, and I said, "What is it that you want?" And he says, "I have an implant." And I said, "Well, a lot of people say that, and they don't." He says, "I have an implant, and that's what caused me to create some of these problems that I've got." And he said, "But I did not kill my mother. Please help me to." Of course, now people do this all the time to get out of the fact that they committed a crime. They want somebody to get them off or whatever. Get him out of the deal. But I don't know whether he's innocent or not. I actually don't know this. But if what he's even said was half true, it sounded like somebody messed his case up pretty bad in the prosecution.
Well, that does happen. And like you say, also the other scenario happens.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to keep them straight.
Yes, sir.
We've only got about 5 minutes left here. So would Daryl Sims like to bring out to our audience that we haven't talked about, other than this book is just now fresh off the press?
This is actually the second printing of the book. This book now has 8 pages of color pictures, which the other one did not have.
The other one didn't. That's so the reason I'm referring to it as a different book. You got some interesting pictures in there. The one that stood out when we talked about was you at 3.5, but some of those other pictures pretty well tell the Daryl Sims story.
That's true. The one picture I like in there is a picture, and I'm holding a little container here, showing it to you, of a little black object inside this little container given to me by the late Dr. Carla Turner. This object has a material in it that was examined by a forensic pathologist by Candy, and he freaked out when he saw it.
And you got that in a little vial here. Roberto will take a picture of that here.
The thing that's interesting about this is the fact that he said this compound cannot exist in this matrix, and you won't use my name in connection with it. What we found out so far about this material is it's biological and metallic at the same time.
Now, you, when we first got acquainted, we talked. You did the implant, a lot of implant.
Yes,
and you're still involved in that. So, what are we talking about when we say it's a combination like that?
Well, the
I mean, how do you know? I mean, is it soft and pliable?
The forensic lab discovered this. That's why they're scared to be a part of it, because that can't exist. It just doesn't exist. But again, if we're talking about the entities being biomechanical, you may have some evidence here. Now, the interesting story behind this, Candy Collar Turner told me the story. She said this woman was raped by something that looked like a pig. It was some kind of a creature on the craft, and there was a man who was a witness to this. These are the scrapings vaginally from her. This is the material we found, and that was the term that was given. She said, I'm giving it to you to find out what happened.
So something that looked like a pig's face raped. So some of these ETs do have sexual organs, not just like.
Well, that. I don't know if it's an ET. It might have been some creature that they had there. For whatever reason, that, in my opinion,
I get what you're saying. You're saying that this is a menagerie, and then you bring up the screen memories, and
you don't know what did what. You really don't know. All we know is she was raped, and that's the material left in her vaginally. So if we can determine what the material is, if it is biological and it is metallic at the same time, and that compound exists in that matrix, which it's not supposed to, it might suggest that whatever raped her, if that is in fact part of the case, may have been of that type of material.
And it could have been another species of the
abducted,
so we don't know too much
about it. It's amazing stuff that a forensic lab wouldn't want to touch it.
And so what's your next step with that? You're kind of
next
stuck?
Step is, I'm happy to say that I'm broke. I've spent every dime I could on my UFO business.
Well, we're going to sell hundreds of thousands of
probably.
Them. Right.
But the fact is, but for those of you who don't know, I actually was really upset about this, and I prayed about it even. And some remarkable thing happened a few weeks ago. I found a building that was 60% finished, 60,000 square feet on 7.5 acres, and I picked it up for $900,000, and it's worth about $6 million. If I can sell it, or I can build it out and finish it out, it'll be worth a lot more. My days, all my trips, events, and all kinds of things are finished, and I can go forward 9,000 miles an hour, just like my wife says I need to do.
So they can go to your website, give out the website again, and they can contact you.
www.alienhunter.org. If you have evidence or an event,
well,
you want to
I'm
talk
thinking
about
selling that property for you. I want you to make it.
Well, here's the deal. Now, this is since I am a believer in sharing. Anybody that sends me a buyer, or in other words, I don't care if you know somebody who knows somebody, and you send me the buyer, they ultimately buy that property because I'm going to give it to them at a steal. I'm going to make it worth somebody's time. If you do that, it's a commercial property. It's
okay.
It's worth double. The land's worth double even what I thought it was.
Okay.
But the point is, I will pay 1 point to whoever does that. That can be anywhere between $30,000 to over $100,000. I'll give that money to them, period, if you send that person.
Okay, you heard it here on the Jerry Pippin Show. Daryl's ready to hand out 100 G's, maybe.
Works for me.
Yeah. Well, I go by the old axiom myself. I'd rather have 10% of something than 100% of nothing. So,
well, when you spend all you've got, all your 10% of everything on abductees and on these experiences and everything else, and you're broke, you've got to do something else, and that's what I need to do. I've got to solve this thing permanently for me, and this will do it.
Okay, Daryl Sims, we wish you luck on that, and I hope you get a bite or two. And I hope you sell a lot of books. The book, again, can be bought at DarylSims.com. It's called The Alien Hunter, Evidence in the Light. And it's your blood, sweat, and tears are inside there, right?
Yes, sir. It's all there.
Thank you very much, Daryl. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. We have A lot of shows coming up, but I have one more segment before we wrap this one up. Daryl, thanks a lot.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com.
Well, we are broadcasting direct from Laughlin, Nevada, and I want to remind you that the UFO Congress is over now, but there'll be another one coming up next year, and it's not too early to get the early bird invitation. If you'd like to find out more information about next year, simply write us here at Jerry@JerryPippin.com, or go over to our conference page and click on the UFO Congress page. We have with us now Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force retired, Lieutenant Colonel Don Ware. Don is active with the UFO Congress here in Laughlin and around the world, actually. Yeah, Don, you're getting ready to go on a big trip, I know. You know, Colonel Ware was actually the first person we ever recorded for a UFO interview, and that was many, many years ago. Too far back, really, to remember. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hey, you got to get inside in just a minute, but tell me a little bit about this. So you were telling me what happened on stage yesterday, and yes, this all goes together.
Yeah, last night we were watching Michael Horn give a talk, and he talked a bit about the Talmud of Emmanuel, and when he quoted Jesus as saying in 2,000 years, there will be a new revelation for humanity. The little light went off in my head, and I thought, gee, he's talking about the Urantia book. And I'm absolutely sure that, because that was 2,000 years from the end of his life is when that book was first acquired. Now that book has been translated into 18 languages, although it was first published in 1955. And I think it's been published in at least 12 of those languages. It will serve humanity well for the next 100 years or more, I'm sure. And, you know, I've always thought that any nonfiction book is the most useful thing humans have, because it allows us to take our life work and pass it on to future generations. And that Urantia book is by far the best book I've ever come across.
Now, you brought us a man here. Tell me a little bit about this man.
Gary Rawlings, I've met at conferences before that are Urantia Association conferences, and I'm so impressed with his knowledge of the book. He happens to be the membership chairman for the Urantia Association International.
And we'll carry on the conversation with Gary and let you get in there and do your real job.
Thank you, Terry.
And we'll be seeing you in Eureka.
Okay.
And this UFO Congress, you guys have done a wonderful job.
Yeah, and you know, you asked me to tell you about my Bigfoot stories in Eureka Springs.
Yes, and okay, we're going to do that. We're going to do that. It's on the schedule. Are you from the UK or where?
Yes, Jerry. I'm. As I said, my name is Gary Rawlings. I'm from Wales in the United Kingdom.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And why don't you explain to our listeners exactly what this is all about?
Well, I'd like to pick up what Don said about Michael Horn about over 2,000 years after Jesus has departed from the planet. The planet we call Urantia, Planet 606, the planet of the cross, the tainted planet. And when Michael Horn said about this revelation, this is exactly the time. The information for the Urantia book started coming in 1924, and it was collated by 1936 and published in 1955.
Now, is this a collection of people who wrote this, or one person did it, or what?
There are no human authors in this book. If you have a look at the actual authors, their deities are very high level. It started as through a sleeping subject, and then it was a question and answer, and then it moved on to a forum. Eventually, all this information, as I said, was from 1924 to 1936 collated, and then published in 1955 by the Urantia Foundation. It's in a number of languages, and it's increasing on a yearly basis.
Now, is this... do you consider this a backup to conventional Christianity, or is this in contrary to it, or exactly how does this fit in?
That's a very interesting question. This is not a new cult. It's not a new religion. It's a book. I think that on the cruise that...
Now, this book is being sold in 18 countries at least.
Well, it certainly is. We've just had the translations for Germany and also for Italy. And, of course, there are more in the pipeline when funds become available.
And do you have a... you mentioned this organization at the top of the show. Is it... Do you have a website or something? Can people find out about this place and read about it?
Correct. I mean, say the Urantia Foundation goes through urantia.org, and the Urantia Association International also has that with the .org scenario there. There are two different facilities for this. The foundation actually prints the book, and also the translation of the book. The Urantia Association International, it sets up the study groups not only in America but around the world. And it's like a family, and it's a tremendous family. Sometimes I know that you can pick your friends, you can pick your family, and I'm very lucky to pick this particular family.
When we talk about this entire situation, can you give me a synopsis? I mean, there's several things in here. There's several sections, right? What's in the book exactly?
Well,
it's a thick book, so you can't...
Exactly, yes. The book is split into four parts, the central universe, the local universe, the history of Urantia. I mean, say this...
And what is Urantia?
Urantia is the name of this planet. It's, as I said, Jerry...
Earth is Urantia.
Earth is Urantia. And then you've got the wonderful life and teachings of Jesus, which is over 700 pages. And it is quite a phenomenal book to read. When it was introduced to me, it was introduced to me as the most important book I will read in my lifetime. And it really is. It is something very, very special. And there are a number of so many interesting topics in there that covers all the way.
What kind of topics?
Well, for instance, this is known in a nutshell as the fifth apocryphal revelation. Do you know what the other four apocryphal revelations were?
No, I wanted to find out if this is the fifth. Tell me about the others.
Okay. 500,000 years ago, we had the Lucifer Rebellion, and that involved Lucifer, Dalagasta, Caligasta, and Satan.
That's the first...
That's right, and basically what happened, God had given these deities the confirmation that to oversee the planet of Urantia. And there was the called, as everybody knows now, the Lucifer Rebellion, because they didn't want to follow the way God wanted it to be. Okay? The second one then from that is 48,000 years ago. We had two of the most important people, and we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them, and that's Adam and Eve. They came from Salvington. They were 7 foot violet race. People, and their DNA with the various tribes, such as the Nordites, created a very special breed of people, And from that, coming down from there, the Cain, from Adam and Eve, you had Cain and Abel, and it was a default. It was a default.
Yeah, we've done many shows about the UFO and ET connections with biblical history, and so this is basically what we're talking about now.
Very much so, a seraphic type transport that came in 48,000 years ago. There were two gardens of Eden.
Oh, really?
Correct. Yes. Not many people know.
Tell me about that.
Well, the first garden of Eden. Everybody's still trying to find out where it is. It's in several locations. Well, we really believe it's off the coast of Cyprus, and it was all one part, one piece of land. It went on then onto the Middle East part, which is the Lebanon. And
we had the general location.
Yeah, that's the general location. The second one, which is very interesting, is where all the major trouble is today, and that is in Iraq, or Mesopotamia, it was known at that particular time.
We could do a whole show on that, but we'll get you back on that. Now, how about the third one?
Okay, the third one is one of the most important people that, again, came here. Machaventa, I got to get this right this time, Machaventa Melchizedek, on the Melchizedeks. This man is in 29 Bibles, and he is just in a little short notice, El Ayun, the high priest. But he was on here, it was over 20-odd pages here. He was here for 94 years. And when he appeared in the tent at the time of Abraham. Abraham was actually a student to him, and his emblem was the three concentric circles.
Wow.
94 years later, his teachings went everywhere. They went to the Levant, the Orient. Confucianism, Buddhism are the watered-down versions of this wonderful person and the people that took these teachings to these all over the world.
Now, we've covered three. We got to get to fourth and fifth.
Okay, well, the fourth is the most unique person that ever walked this planet, and that is Jesus. Jesus of Nazareth, as we know him. But we know him as Michael of Nebadon. And he had a bestowal. It was a total 100% bestowal coming down to this earth. And he had to be born, and he had to live, and he had to die as a human being. And when he left, when he departed, he made 19 appearances in a Moronsha form. Now, this is very interesting.
Tell me about that. You got my attention with that. 19?
19 appearances after that resurrection. And the Moronsha form is not even in the dictionary. We have a concordance, because when we were given this book, there were some words you could not put into the dictionary. Moronsha, M-O-R-A-N-T-I-A, is basically transparent. And the easiest way is when Jesus said to Mary Magdalene, "Mary, do not touch me, know me as I was," because her hand would have gone through him. He was in a transparent form. And he made 19 appearances after the...
The same area.
In very much in the same area around Galilee, Jerusalem.
Uh-huh. And this, I think, takes quite a few pages, just this part about Jesus in this book, right?
It certainly does. It's over 700 pages. Uh-huh. But the story is, it's very... In the Bible, there are 5 to 6 years of his life are missing. This book, the Urantia book, tells you where he actually met up with Ganad and Gaynad, father and son, from India. They went from Alexandria. They went to Crete. They went to Cyprus. They went to Naples in Italy. They traveled up into the Northern Lakes, into Switzerland. They come back via Rome. They went on to then Damascus. It's incredible. It's just a wonderful story.
Now, let's get to the last one.
The last one is this, the Urantia book. The fifth apocryphal revelation is that. And Michael Horn, on what he said yesterday, is correct. This is going to be the revelation. But we can't, everybody that's associated with the Arantia book, we cannot cast pearls before the swine. I cannot run up and down a bus with this, but if I see somebody who has got any knowledge or are interested in this particular book, then I can tell them about that.
And let's give the websites one more time. We're out of time here. The clock's got us. So we can people can check into this.
Okay. Well, you've got the website is and which you can actually check out the Rancher Association International. You can get
yes.
this through the same one, website, and that's you can go to www.urancher.org, and you'll be able to get to both sites from there.
I wish we had more time. You just kind of scratched the surface, but we've got a general idea of people who need to follow this up.
Well, very much.
You have no doubt this is the straight skinny. Dude.
Very much, Jerry.
If
I can just relate to this now. That's,
okay.
I came over to Nevada, and my mom died on Sunday, and it was very difficult for me to come, but I had to come the same time as Terry Brown died.
Right.
But Mom is on her way now. Hopefully, if she's fused with a thought adjuster, and that's another superb story. Not a story, a fact as far as we're concerned. And I hope that
we normally say they're going to heaven. Now, what are you saying happens to them?
What we're actually saying is that we all have what they call a thought adjuster, and we really don't know about it. But people who have got the book from 107, pages 107 to 112, will tell you about this thought adjuster. And with this thought adjuster, it keeps the record of your life while you're down here on this planet. So when you actually go from here and you fuse with that thought adjuster, what happens? You then go to the first, you actually go to a place called the Resurrection Hall. And from the Resurrection Hall, then the two components, which is the thought adjuster and your soul, enter into a coffin-type scenario. And then from that, when they come out, when you were the best on this planet, when you had everything, when you were the most good-looking person there, when you had all your faculties, but you'd be in a Arantia form. Wow. What is that somewhere to look for? That's something special.
We extend our hand of sympathy about your mother's death, but sounds like she's in a better place.
Very much so. This is a very hard place down here, and the greatest thing that we all as humans need to have is teamwork, love, and teamwork. Room for pride, egos in this world, and if we can work together, because this is the greatest thing. When you're up there, teamwork is there. Now she's going there to sublime adventure, and she is going to be awoken on the shores very, very shortly, and I know Mom will be there when I get there as well. My
Thank
fingers
you very
crossed
much.
For that.
We also want, and we mentioned it just then, Terry Brown passed away just as the conference got underway, and we've mentioned it on the air before. Bob Brown and daughter Nikki have done a wonderful job, and the rest of the UFO Congress.
Wonderful. I'm going to say it. I'm just overwhelmed at the kindness that the people here in Laughlin,
right.
in Nevada, are showing us, and I trust that many more people will come to the next Congress meeting in February of next year. And I look forward to seeing people there, and I know they're going to enjoy themselves.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. With that, we'll close. This has been a show from the UFO Congress. Roberta Scott's our on-location producer. Our tape editor was Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers.
The doors are finally open at ShopJerryPippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features 3 different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at ShopJerryPippin.com.